Welcome to this first session on the second day of the Scaling Corporate Learning event. With us is Abajoshi Gani. We're going to discuss for the next 30 minutes the World Bank's Open Learning Campus. So welcome to all the participants. Thank you, George, for handing over the I guess I'm a panelist or presenter or what have you. So first of all, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role within the World Bank?
So my name is Abajoshi Gani, and I'm the Director for Knowledge Exchange and Learning. And I've been with the World Bank for almost 20 years. Currently, I head the Knowledge Exchange and Learning Department of the World Bank Institute. Many of you might know that the World Bank Institute is kind of a think tank part of the World Bank, which is really dedicated to learning, to innovation, and to leadership and coalition building. And until now, our focus has really been our development partners and clients, so we were not internally facing at all. But as of July 1, we would be the Vice Presidency for Leadership, Learning, and Innovation, and we would be doing learning, innovation, and leadership, and coalition building, both inside the World Bank and with our clients.
Right. So, can you summarize the current offering around education through the World Bank Institute? What do you offer? For whom? And what difference does it make?
So currently, the World Bank Institute offers a mix of online and face-to-face courses, and we have about 100 courses which span a variety of, you could call them thematic areas or sectors, ranging from health, education, urban planning and development, climate change, competitiveness and growth, public-private partnerships and infrastructure, and so on. And we really launched what we call our e-institute as a proof of concept about 3 years ago when we started offering online learning for our clients. And the idea was mainly, you know, we are a global institution, our clients are globally located, and what we needed was to reach out, which, you know, face-to-face learning or capacity building doesn't allow us to do that. So the e-institute was our platform to then reach out as online learning, mostly through facilitated courses, which run from 4 to 6 weeks, and we now have about a suite of 100 courses. We also offer webinars as, you know, short, quick learning on emerging topics or important topics. We also run communities of practice, and we do South-South exchange, which is really the flow of knowledge and learning from developing countries to other developing countries, which seems to be really on the uptake right now.
So 50,000 participants in 3 years is an impressive and a fairly massive number. How did you sort of conceptually think through the relevance of scaling up for development education? What are you looking at actually? Is 50,000 enough in order to sort of achieve impact in development education?
That's an excellent question, Reda. You know, certainly 50,000 is not enough. And, you know, the reason being that, you know, right now, if you look at what is our major development challenge, it really is capacity with the governments, with policymakers, with NGOs in developing countries, and just citizens at large. And when we try and frame this within the broader goals of the World Bank, which are to eliminate extreme poverty and to boost shared prosperity, and let me take a minute to explain that. You know, today about a billion people live on $1.25 a day, which is really loose change to most of us. It won't even buy you a coffee at Starbucks, if I may say so. And yet these are people who are trying to feed their families, clothe their families, put a roof over their heads, get access to health and education, all within $1.25 a day. So this is one of the most enormous challenges that we all face today. And specifically, development institutions like the World Bank and developing country governments. Secondly, you know, we know that there's been a tremendous growth, and you know, China and India have grown for at least until a few years ago at 9 to 10% every year. But exactly what has happened with this growth? Has it really trickled down to the broad swath of population? No, it hasn't. We still have, you know, 40% of the world's population at the bottom 40% of economic development. So the World Bank's two key goals are to eliminate extreme poverty and to boost shared prosperity. And we find that learning and capacity building is a key accelerator. You know, it's that delta which would make the difference by equipping people with skills. When we talk to developing countries today, they said that their biggest challenge is capacity building. So, you know, given that context, you know, of course, 50,000 people is not enough. And that's the reason that we wanted to actually scale it up even more. And this is through what we've now proposed, the Open Learning Campus. And the Open Learning Campus is really going to be a leading edge, you know, one-stop shop, both for our clients and for our staff, on digital learning as well as face-to-face learning. Right. I mean, you know, what it would offer is, you know, pedagogical expertise, learning paths, learning design, and then just reaching out to people with a variety of offerings, bite-sized.
Before we talk about the Open Learning Campus, I want to talk about one specific initiative, which is only one of the many things that the Institute is doing around online and distance learning, which was the climate change MOOC, which the World Bank offered for the first time through Coursera earlier this year. I found it to be innovative on a number of levels. You were, if not the one of the first international organizations to actually release and run a MOOC on one of the big MOOC providers. It had a shorter format than university courses, so it was a 4-week course and had a sort of less formal tone. I believe it was called "Turn Down the Heat." So I think that the story of how, when and why you decided to actually organize this in partnership with Coursera, I think would make an interesting story for the corporate learning officers and others participating in the conference. So how did you get involved in this, and what are the key takeaways now that the first iteration of the course has run?
Sure. Thanks for bringing that up, Reda, because it really caused a whole lot of excitement within the bank when we offered the climate change MOOC, which is called "Turn Down the Heat," and what a 4-degree centigrade world would look like. So the key reason for us to move from e-learning courses into a MOOC was just to say, how do we take very important development topics and take them out beyond our traditional audience of policymakers, practitioners, government officials, because we know that a topic like climate change is something that concerns all of us, and there are a whole lot of people out there who want to know exactly what is the impact of climate change? Is it actually happening? How can I contribute personally? What is the impact on development and growth? So for us to do this MOOC was really as a way of reaching out, of advocacy, of creating that awareness of on an extremely important topic, and we felt that MOOC was the right instrument for us to do that, because firstly, you know, it reaches out to a lot more people than specifically structured courses, and it's just open to everybody. The reason for us to do a MOOC which is you know, different from academic MOOCs which are being offered by Coursera and edX and others was that this really wasn't an academic course with a credit at the end of it. It was for advocacy, it was for awareness raising, and it was just to get people to start thinking about issues like climate change and development. So that's why we did this MOOC. It was hugely successful. We had about 20,000 participants, and about 80% actually stayed with them. If you want specific numbers, I could give them to you as well.
Okay, I'm interested in those. Have you? We've been discussing in the context of the symposium the real costs of MOOCs. So, from an organizational perspective, are you able to tell us what was the investment made by the World Bank Institute in order to produce both in terms of sort of staff and financial costs?
So, in terms of budget, we spent over 200,000 for content enhancement and repackaging, and including, you know, costs for staff time, consultants, and vendors. But I have to say this: that the MOOC was based on a World Bank flagship report of the same name. So the content was there. You know, if we had started content from scratch, it would have taken us longer, and it would have cost us a lot more. And the work was also managed in-house. You know, drawing on our own expertise of staff as experts on the subject, and then consultants and so on. And then we, in addition to a core team from the World Bank Group, we had an external advisory committee of leading experts from the University of Michigan, for example, or Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, National Climate and Data Center, University of Edinburgh, and so on. Right. So we were really able to coalesce a lot of very important partners from outside in terms of, you know, expertise and other assistance. So I would say that, you know, financially, I would say it was 200,000, but just in terms of staff effort and so on, if it started from scratch, it would have been more.
Right. And what was the size of the production team directly involved, sort of throughout the process, to actually produce this 4-week online course? How, just in terms of people and maybe something about the roles that you had internally?
So I would say that we had a dedicated team of about 10 people, right? This included people who had been involved in writing the reports, who were very, very thoroughly looking at the content. And, you know, as we were doing the interviews, you know, the scripts and what did we want to bring out. Plus then the whole the pedagogical packaging, the multimedia, and all of that. So I would say 10 dedicated staff over 6 months. But I was just amazed at the speed with which we were able to deliver this, given that, you know, we had a whole lot of other things going on.
Right.
But also just the quality of this MOOC. I don't know how many of you were able to even log in and see one module at least, but you know, it we had just tremendous feedback on this.
So you start with a high quality content in a flagship report. You sort of add a team that has prior experience, deep experience with distance and online learning and technology and the delivery of that, and only then can you actually produce something so quickly, I imagine.
Yes, you know, we've developed some expertise within the bank because we've been doing this this online learning, and then of course we were very happy to access expertise from outside as well. Right. But I also want to remind you that specifically for this topic, you know, it's a fairly sensitive and controversial topic. As you know, climate change, there are believers and there are non-believers. So just the handling of the content and how we presented it had to be sort of really well done.
Okay. Before we talk about this really enticing slide about the Open Learning Campus that's been up, that you've put up, I want to go over one last point, which is about impact and basically what, you know, what are the sort of qualifiers of success with this Turn Down the Heat MOOC? You said 20,000 people. So, you know, one of the much discussed indicators is the completion rate. So we'd, of course, like to know that. But also any other measures of learner motivation, expectations, and behavior, as well as any information you can share about who the learners were. Were they from developing countries? You know, what sort of backgrounds were you able to reach new audiences? So I apologies for lumping all these questions into one, but I'd love to hear more about the impact.
Sure. No, this is. I'm glad that you asked this question, Reda. So, in terms of just statistics, we had some 19,500 people who registered as participants. About a third of these were between the ages of 18 to 34. This is not our usual audience, right? And over half of the participants were from developing countries, and that was very exciting for us. I'm just trying to think how many people actually stayed with the course.
12%.
So 12% actually stayed with the course and completed it. So I think just in terms of percentage compared to other MOOCs, it's a pretty decent percentage. And 9% or 10% actually finished the course and got certificates of accomplishment. So that was pretty huge for us. And then we also found that the projects at the end of the MOOC were very, very interesting, and the discussions which took place were very enriching, and we captured quite a lot of that in order to inform us going forward when we do more courses. I also wanted to say that, in order to sort of serve the audience better in terms of their interest, we offered two tracks to appeal to different audiences. First was the Climate Champions track, which is suitable for anybody with an interest in climate change and provided insights into the science behind climate change and opportunities to further expand knowledge in key areas. And the other one was Policy and Leadership track, which involved connecting with others in similar positions, example, policymakers at the provincial, national, or local level, representatives of the civil society, academia, and so on around the world. And it helped them to develop new networks of practice around climate change issues. So that's how it was. And in terms of sort of, if you want to say what was the real impact, measurable impact, I would say that, measuring impact of one MOOC is, we don't have enough data points even to do that.
Sure.
So we want to wait and, do a few MOOCs and then say exactly how are these impacting different than our online courses? What kind of impact are we actually looking for? Is it just advocacy? Is it more than that? How many actually want to come back for a deeper understanding of the topic or, take the more more structured track within the MOOC.
Right.
But I do want to say that this wasn't like your normal MOOC credit course being offered.
Okay, very interesting. So also, if I understand correctly, this MOOC is one component in a more sort of comprehensive approach to offer various kinds of learning opportunities, tracks, context, addressing different audiences. So that's the Open Learning Campus, which you've already told us a little bit about. Within the context of this symposium on scaling up learning, can you summarize how the Open Learning Campus looks at, tackles this question of scale, and how big a consideration is it, in fact, for you?
Okay. To really understand why, we are going with the Open Learning Campus, it's important to, just see what is the existing platform that we have and how are we tackling learning within the bank, given that we consider it as a key accelerator for development and given that there's just an enormous demand on capacity building and continuous learning from our development country clients. So right now, learning is, for want of a better word, I would say is fairly fragmented at the bank. So, our regional colleagues do that. Our sectoral colleagues do their learning. Then WBI was doing client learning. We had staff learning, which was separate. So, one of the key sort of outcomes of having an open learning campus is to really firstly consolidate all learning under one platform. Secondly, we felt that, what have we learned from the learning ecosystem within the World Bank Group? And some of the key lessons for us was that firstly, when client and staff learn together, it is really powerful, because what we're doing is we are connecting global knowledge with local imperatives, and we're creating these iterative feedback loops where you know, we can fine-tune what solutions we are looking at, and our local partners and clients on the ground can bring their tacit knowledge into what we are attempting to do. So that makes for a really powerful way of learning together. So we want to do joint staff and client learning as intact teams, either around projects or around reform areas. Secondly, what we found was that south-south learning is very, very important, because you know, when a country like let's say Brazil wants to learn from another country, they may not necessarily look at the global north, because they want to look at countries at the same stage of development with similar resource constraints, either financial or capacity development, and see how have other countries, other utilities, or other local governments innovated within these constraints to achieve, let's say, for example, service delivery or inclusion in cities. So south-south learning becomes very important, and we wanted to bring that onto the Open Learning Campus as well. Mm-hmm. Now, thirdly, we know that in this world of really everybody being so busy, plus the fact that, you know, you have low bandwidths in a huge part of the world, people don't actually always have access to laptops and computers, but at the same time, there's a huge penetration of mobile telephony and smartphones. You know, when I go to India, I find that the guard at the ministry, at the gate of the ministry, is busy watching a video on his smartphone, right? So, you know, it really penetrates down. So we wanted to be able to offer a variety of ways of learning, you know, of small podcasts, little talks, bite-sized learning, you know, more sort of based on TED Talks and so on. So, and then more academic and structured learning that we were always doing. And then really top it up with these communities of practice, which always appear when we are doing a course as peer-to-peer learning. And then they would disappear once the course was finished. But the Open Learning Campus would be able to offer a platform where these communities of practice could thrive and continue. And then they are really our feedback loops to for us to improve and to adjust to you know, local conditions, what's being talked about, what's, you know, the new innovations happening around. So the OLC brings these three areas together. We call them three schools. And that was really one of the biggest motivations for us to go for something like this.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So one last question is actually knowing that this is an event organized by a corporate learning or hosted by CorpU, which is a corporate learning company. Speaking to that corporate sector, if I'm a chief learning officer in a, you know, in a global, you know, corporation, in a global company, what is the value for me? How can I use the resources, the courses offered by the Open Learning Campus? Are there ways in which you see the corporate sector as, you know, as a potential user, or as an actual or potential user of the Open Learning Campus? And if so, how? What value could I get as a CLO by either recommending or prescribing, you know, courses from the World Bank to staff that's really focused on, you know, so sort of more immediate business, you know, delivery objectives?
So, you know, the very reason that we call it the Open Learning Campus is because it is truly open. It's open to everybody, and the way that we are, in fact, structuring it is that it's easy for people to come and register and go for courses. But we also are calling it the Open Learning Campus because we don't just want to list World Bank Group products here or just what we are doing. What we want to do is really leverage what our partners are doing, what other corporations are doing in the learning space, what universities are doing. So, for example, There are a whole lot of universities which are actually offering development curriculum, and we are exploring how do we partner with them so that we could in fact list their courses on this open learning campus. Similarly with other multilateral or bilateral institutions like Inter-American Development Bank, Asian Development Bank, and so on, who also have a whole lot of online learning. How do we connect with them and bring their courses on ours? And we, you know, I think there is no little niche group that this learning belongs to or is needed for. We really want to open up learning on development issues to, you know, globally to the whole world. And today, when you look at the private sector, they are huge global players with huge global footprints. So, you know, if you are an energy company trying to do a public-private partnership, let's say in Kenya, for example, then it's important for you that the Kenyans know about public-private partnerships, that they have the capacity to take projects forward, to take contracts forward, to not renege on commitments. And the private sector understands what are the political, economic, and other constraints in the country. So I think it really benefits. It's a true open learning campus for the whole world in that sense, because, you know, nobody is an island anymore. We are all global players, and we all have global interests, and we all have global clients. So I really want this to open up to everybody, really.
Abajo Shigani, thank you. We now have a few minutes remaining for questions or comments from the participants. George, I'm not sure that I can see the questions. So let me see. No, I can't. So
I'm currently not seeing questions in the question area. So for those of you that are attendees, you see a little question tab. There, the blue bar on the GoToWebinar control panel. Feel free to enter any panels or any questions there. But while we're waiting, if anyone comes in, quick question on the Open Learning Campus. I've been aggressively Googling it to try and find it. Is this something that is going to be a public? I mean, I guess Open Learning, I would expect. But is there a URL that you can share at this stage, or are you still in the development process?
It's actually still in the development process, and right now, if you want to look at World Bank Learning, you should Google the E Institute. But we hope to have a soft launch at the end of this year, or you know, January of 2015. So it is still under development, but it's on an accelerated path, as it were.
Okay, I saw the E-Institute, and I'm just looking at the screen you have up now. I particularly like the focus, and I think this is something that I've been arguing about, formal learning or university-level learning, but what I think what you've managed to do here is bridge the, or just reflect the diversification of learning needs that we have societally today, so that structured learning alone isn't sufficient, but by the same account, social or communal or just-in-time learning is also not enough. It's really about seeing the spectrum of learning and identifying the context in which one approach is more desirable than the other, so the context really determines the learning approaches, and it looks like this is well reflected in the image that you have up on the screen or the table.
Yeah, I actually just wanted to add a little bit to that. We also don't look at learning as a silo. We do take an integrated approach of learning leadership and innovation. So, you know, in a lot of our interaction with our clients, we try and bring all three together, and that would mean e-learning as well as face-to-face learning, but combining, you know, a multi-stakeholder coalition building, a sort of action learning or leadership within that sector, within that context, and then also innovations like, you know, getting beneficiary feedback or citizen feedback on our services being delivered, you know, what are the key impediments and so on. So really looking at learning leadership and innovation as a combined integrated approach to, you know, accelerate development, to make that change happen. And we've done that very, very successfully, for example, in the water utility reform in Nigeria, or city management, service delivery, and leadership in Southeastern Europe with the Balkan countries. There we were actually able to bring together countries which don't even have diplomatic relations or have very strange relations, but we were able to bring cities together to work together on service delivery, governance, transparency, and city management. So it's very, very exciting. These are just not simple technical courses at all. We do take it to the next level in that sense.
Great. Unless there are questions in the question box or further questions from any of the participants, I would encourage anybody who'd like to follow up in the discussion to move to the online space, and that's bmooc.corpu.com. Okay, I see George has already posted the link. Thank you all, and George, I believe the next session I will be presenting on, learning innovation and leadership in the humanitarian and development sector, but also looking at what the developments at the World Bank and in other organizations might mean for corporate learning as well. So that will be in half an hour if I have the correct schedule.
So you do indeed, Retta, and I'm looking forward to that. And thanks very much for doing an excellent job hosting this session, and to ABBA and colleagues at World Bank for providing us some great insight into an innovative, meaningful, and high-impact project. So for the rest of you, we will be in this same room in about 27 minutes, and I'll end the recording now.
Great.
Thank you, Retta, and thank you, George. This was very, very exciting for us to be able to present.